specific to me is I'm trying to use prayers that are more applicable and more kind of in the moment. So, and I'm also practicing praying with others. So if you'll help me practice that, then I'd be grateful. God, we ask you to come today with open hearts and open minds to help us look at this information in a new way, and please help us to look inside ourselves and see where we can use this information to be a better service to others. Please help us to know that we're loved and lovable and capable of sharing that love with other people. And please let Dania and I understand as facilitators to just understand that we did this work and we've worked with others, and this is a culmination of what's been shared from the many alcoholics that came before, and we're grateful for the gift you gave us to start this journey. Amen. So my name is Micah. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 6th, 2011, and my home group is the Happy Hour Group in Macon, Georgia.
Hey, y'all. I'm Dania. I got sober August 3rd, 2016. My home group is the Vine Angle Group in Macon, Georgia, and I'm so glad to be here.
So as I mentioned, the work we're about to discuss kind of came as a cultivation of Dania and I running into a local meeting together. We had just finished some schooling. We were both pretty well into our sobriety a few years, and we were worried about the free time we were about to encounter. And so we had both discussed it at the meeting, and we said, well, you know, we did our inventory. We found our safe and sane ideal as it pertained to relationships. But we wanted to kind of revisit it and see if there was more to look at. And so we decided to get together and pulled information from the Big Book and the 12 and 12. And for a number of years, I've been leading workshops at the Florida Roundup and also at the GSM Men's Sober Conference in New York. And we decided to bring this workshop to those venues. And the hundreds of feedback that we got from the other people is like, hey, what about long-term relationships? What about regular relationships? And so it became much more of an evolution of everybody's work coming back, and it helped us to shape and mold what's here. My intention for you today is that maybe there'll be some kind of nugget that you'll resonate with that you can use in your own work, but I just want to encourage you that just look for the things that resonate with you and focus on that and leave the rest behind. Two resources that I wanted to mention other than the Big Book and the 12 and 12 that we're going to be talking about is the Grapevine book, Forming True Partnerships, and there are some available out in the lobby. This is a collection of experience, strength, and hope for different relationships. And I just want to set the tone by saying, even though this work was started by us looking for our own relationships, it's really expanded into everyday relationships. And just examples from the chapters, they have the family, marriage and divorce, dating and romance, on the job, friendship, pets and animals, and sponsorship. So we're really talking about lots of different relationships in our day-to-day lives, and this work could be applicable to any of those. And hopefully by the time we leave today, you'll have a good understanding of that. The other thing that we're going to reference is a Terry Gorski CD. He's an AA speaker, and Lee has made several copies of that CD available. You can also get it on a flash drive, or you can have a digital download emailed to you that you can download to your device. It was a really powerful foundation that kind of planted the seed for a lot of the work that we did also. So if you want expansions of this, then feel free to get those resources. We also understand that in this time frame, we're just going to be reviewing the material and hopefully jogging your minds with a few examples just to get you inspired. But our desire is that maybe you'll move forward, maybe do little clusters of work and come up with your own answers. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Dania, and she's going to do some readings from the literature for us.
How are you guys feeling today? Good, good. It's glad to be here. Good to be here. Good to see all these faces. All right, I'm going to read a little bit from the 12 and 12. It's going to start on page 116, and it'll move to 117. We were still trying to find emotional security by being dominating or dependent upon others, even when our fortunes had not ebbed that much and nevertheless found ourselves alone in the world. We still vainly tried to be secure by some unhealthy kind of domination or dependence. For those of us who were like that, AA had a very special meaning. Through it, we began to learn right relations with people who understand us. We don't have to be alone anymore. Nearly every sound human being experiences at some time in life a compelling desire to find a mate with whom the fullest possible union can be made, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. This mighty urge is the root of great human accomplishments, a creative energy that deeply influences our lives. God fashioned us that way. So our question will be this: how, by ignorance, compulsion, and self-will, do we misuse these gifts for our own destruction? We AAs cannot pretend to offer full answers to age-old perplexities, but our own experience does provide certain answers that work for us. All right, I'm going to pass it over to Micah to elaborate a little bit more on that before I say anything else.
So the three questions being the self-will, compulsion, and also just how do we look at that and the ignorance, right? The ignorance to me was not having an ideal of what I'm looking for in a relationship, no matter what the relationship was, right? So just to be clear, you know, working a fourth step inventory with your sponsor prior to digging deeper is a good idea. You know, how many of you have already done a fourth step in AA? Great. So the ignorance was me not having a good ideal of what I was looking for and which types of relationships I was looking for. The self-will is me thinking about just what I'm wanting out of the relationship, is being totally negligent of what the other person may want or need. You know, it's all about what I learned in AA initially was how to speak my own truth. And it took a long time to speak about what I wanted and needed. And the selfish column in the inventory taught me how to do that, to declare what I want or don't want. And a lot of times there was a lot of false guilt out of making a declaration, I want such and such, right? So I don't think it's bad for me to want things. It's again by the compulsion, self-will, and ignorance that tends to get out of hand. So compulsion is I want you to blow my mind on demand right now, right? It's like all these expectations that I tend to put on people when I'm trying to meet a need or fill something. So what we're hoping to look at is to just expand on that and look at how those ways show up in our own inventories.
So there's this part in the reading that I really liked. It said, through it, we begin to learn right relations with people who understand us. We don't have to be alone anymore. So when I came in, all I wanted was to get sober, right? I wanted the drink to be out of my life. I wanted the obsession to be lifted. But after that happened, I was like, well, what do I do next? You know, where do I go from here? I don't have relationships with other people because I burnt all of those bridges. And I don't know how to have relationships with other people. So I love that this program kind of took me in. People loved on me and gave me the opportunity to practice those relationships. It was a safe space for me to understand if I have a conflict with someone else, I can go to them and know that they're going to grow with me through this conflict. It's going to be a situation where I can feel comfortable that I can be vulnerable with you people, right? Which was an awesome thing to have. And I also love the part when it says, the fullest possible union can be made spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. And from that, that's where a lot of our work began. We moved into talking about these in a quadrant form. And it made us take a deeper look on how relationships look with other people, and not just a significant other, right? That's kind of where this work started, with how do I want to be with another human being? And then it blossomed into so much more. It's like, how do I live in a world among you? How do I live in this world among fellows, right? So I'm going to hand it back over to Micah, and then we're going to move on to the next part of this.
So when I'm looking at quadrants, the book tells me already that my natural desire is to make the fullest possible union, right? And so I think it's okay. It's a natural urge to want to connect fully with somebody in that way. But think about the different aspects of relationships, right? Because if we were to talk about a physical need, right, I can tell you where my mind used to go prior to recovery. It's like everything physical was under one category. And, you know, it's funny when we were actually asked about doing a relationships workshop for the 69th prepaid convention. It's like, well, what better reference than page 69? And just like the book taught me initially, is when I came in and I read the book, it was all about drinking, right? But I stayed long enough, the obsession was lifted, and I learned that alcohol was but the symptom. And so the same thing I've discovered from my own experience to be true. And so I'm going to read just a little from 69, and I know that you have an understanding of it, but I'm going to leave out the words associated with sex. And I just want you to close your eyes if it's comfortable for you and see if this feels applicable with day-to-day relationships now. So it says, we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's conduct. We all have problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. But what can we do about them? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault, and what should we have done instead? We got this all on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our powers were good, God-given, and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat everything as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what to do about each specific matter, and the right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our situations. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical as others are loose, and we avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean that we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only half truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts of our experience. Is that not applicable today, whether the obsession's there or not? So when we're looking at these quadrants, I think about aspects, and you know, I'm going to start with the physical and then turn it over for Dania to finish up the other three. But you'll see on the worksheet, and you don't have to feel like you have to keep up and walk out with this today. Remember, it's just an introduction to it. But the physical aspect, maybe it is an ideal mate. But what if it's a pet? You know, I've encountered people that say, you know, maybe I've got a dog that's a little bit too big, and maybe I'm elderly and I'm having a hard time getting around. I've had plenty of people that have gotten knocked down by the animals because they're a little bit more rambunctious or bigger. Or maybe you've got one that's a little bit too petite and the environment that it's in is not quite appropriate, right? So I'm thinking about the physical aspects, which can include the environment. What about with an employer? Maybe my physical need might be that I need to sit. I can't do a job that I stand all day. That's a physical need, right? So I just want you to think outside the box, A, for what type of a relationship you're considering when you're doing this work, but then B, what is a physical component of that? So Dana's going to elaborate, and we'll take a few examples as well.
Yeah. All right, this is my favorite part of this whole workshop, is doing the quadrants, because it turns into like a list, a laundry list of what you're looking for in a relationship, right? The idea that we can kind of create in our minds how this relationship is going to look. So let's start with the physical, and we'll take some examples from you guys if you feel comfortable or feel moved to share. So one of the physical aspects that I picked on my list was someone who was taller than me. You know, and that goes for a relationship with someone else, not necessarily a friendship. A friendship, I'd like someone to be willing to do physical activities with, right? Someone who is down to go hiking when I want to go hiking, or someone who wants to hit the gym with me at 8 a.m. in the morning. So it all depends on which kind of relationship you're looking at. So anybody want to shout out some examples or let us know what they might be looking physically for some sort of relationship?
You can raise your hand.
Yeah. Active person, yes. Healthy. Someone said healthy, yes. Health conscious. The aging process? All right. Someone who cuddles. All right, yes. And, oh, a cute booty. That is a good one. That is a good one. Awareness of personal space. Yes, yes. You know, there are people who feel a little bit more comfortable to touch your shoulder whenever they come by you. And sometimes I'm like, can you kind of ask if I like to be touched, you know? Sometimes we come into this program with a little bit of trauma or, you know, situations that cause us to not feel comfortable being touched. So someone asking if that's okay.
And what about eye contact? I had a sponsor once when I was complaining how nobody was talking to me in early recovery after the meeting. And he said, did it ever occur to you that you always look like you got a scowl on your face? He said, why don't you try smiling at some of these people? And I said, I already came down to the meeting. I haven't drank, and now you're telling me I have to smile? But it's a physical attribute, right? It makes us approachable. And I can tell you, even from being up here doing this, you know, the people that are making eye contact and looking and get, you know, it helps. It helps. It helps to keep things going. So is that not a physical that we look for in some of the relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation.
We might get into that one.
Yeah, I was thinking when I heard words of affirmation, we have some other categories, and sometimes I feel like attributes overlap in different categories, so that can fall under this for you, but for others it might fall under another category as well. Mm-hmm. Someone who likes to play or a sense of humor. All right. Yeah, let's move into another quadrant. I feel like we're moving in a direction where you guys are kind of elaborating more on all the other ones as well. So let's move into the emotional category right now. An example for me would be someone who feels secure expressing their emotions to me. Someone who's in tune with them. Anyone else?
Honesty
and vulnerability. Yes. Someone who's got some compassion. Empathy. Integrity.
Hold up, I can't write that fast.
Let's pause for 1 second and let Micah catch up. I love all these answers, though, because this is what it's all about, you know, coming together and having a collaboration. And that's kind of how it worked with Micah and I. We sat down together, and some of the things he brought to the table I hadn't thought about. And some of the things that I brought to the table, he was like, okay, kind of cool. I like that. Okay.
Maybe that's
yes, no problem. Non-judgmental. Someone who can hold space. Flexibility. That can be in the physical category as well. Someone who's patient, tolerant, someone who emotionally supportive, sense of humor, all right, someone who's available. When I call, you better answer that cell phone immediately. Kind, yes. Logical? Oh, positive. Sorry. I read lips sometimes, so I'm like, where is that coming from? I hear something. Respectful, yes. Hears you, yes. These are great. These are great.
Selfless. I'm going to write it quick. So some other examples that came over the course of the workshops is maybe a soft temperament, you know, somebody that can self-regulate, you know, somebody that can emotionally process and handle or has a process for doing that. So these are some other elaborations, not just necessarily emotional qualities, but also maybe how they handle and manage their emotions or express their emotions. So we're glad that y'all are jump-starting with so many different examples here.
These are great. Mental? Yeah, let's move on to the mental category. One of the ones that was on my list was someone who's able to problem solve or uses other people to help them problem solve. You know, someone who is adaptable. Sane, okay. In another setting, I would be like, please elaborate on that, but not today. Intellectual, all right, yes. Open-minded, yeah. Curious. Let's let Micah catch up with all of these great answers. Someone who's understanding, yes. Confidence?
Keeps confidence.
Oh, yes.
Imaginative.
Yes. Consistent. Yes. Someone who can make a decision. Yes. Balance between mental and emotional. Yes. What about the idea of knowing one's own values and aligning with those values? You know, walking the walk, talking the talk, and doing the action.
Creative,
yes. Willing to compromise. I love that one.
Accountability,
yes. Anybody else on this? So we can move to the next one. Yes. Honesty, yes. Someone who's sensitive, yes. In tune with all those feels. Everything that's going on inside, right?
Self-aware. Real quick. Yeah. So some other examples that were kind of out of the box that came for different people. Teachable, thank you. Okay, thank you. Teachable, heard. Some other examples that have come up are examples of... One that had come up for me is to have somebody with a problem-solving hobby. Because I'm an artist and I like doing my art. And if I don't have a partner or a friend that has some kind of problem-solving hobby, I don't care if it's crossword puzzles, but I don't think they would understand why I need to be with my craft so much and what that brings to me. So that was just something that I like to bring to the table with it. Some mental things is somebody that has a process, again, for regulating mental health. People that have connections or foundations so that they can move through with that. Somebody that's not too overly cognitive. That's been something that's come up before. So it's not necessarily just the attributes of intelligence, but just anything that can be associated with the mental.
Yeah. Right, exactly. All right. Moving on to the next one. The spiritual column. Honestly, whenever I was doing this work, the spiritual column was one of the harder ones for me because my spirituality is so personal to me, and I want to allow other people to have that about themselves as well. So I just want to say that if this one is difficult for you, I can totally relate. But one of the things that I found that I was looking for in another person, whether it be a friend or a mate, would be belief in some sort of higher power. You know, that was one of the things that was non-negotiable for me. Just being able to have that process of connecting to something greater than themselves. So,
Acceptance, okay.
Open-minded.
Ability to share. Tolerant of different spiritualities, yes. Agree to disagree. Willing to grow. I love that one, yes. Humble. Explorational. Non-judgmental.
Willing to be open.
Loving.
Loving yourself.
Spiritual program of action. Yes, walking the walk. Taking that action.
Peaceful.
Thinking? Seeking. I was like, thinking? Okay. To each their own.
Seeking.
Yes. Forgiveness, yes. Listening, yes.
Consistency,
yeah. Generosity. I put on here someone who's willing to explore their spirituality with me, whether it's the same as me or not, but someone who's open to showing me what's going on in their spirituality.
Communication.
So, some other things to think about, too, are the actions that you would want to participate. So, like, for example, one that was on mine is I want people that are willing to pray with me. And I'll tell you a quick example. Is I practiced with my sister first. We went to go eat a dinner with her out in Athens. And I said, hey, can we pray together? And she's like, oh, sure. You know, and she went down, closed her eyes. And I did the prayer. And I was, like, all proud because I was like, oh, I made it all personal. And I was like, thank you for my sister. Thank you for the space. You know, all that. And then we got done. And she was still sitting there with her eyes closed. And she said, oh, cool. Are you done? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay, can I pray now? And I said, oh, yeah. And it had never occurred to me to hold space to let the other person comment and bring stuff in the prayer. And I was like, oh, okay. But then also I started praying with some of my students after class. We would go to eat lunch or something. It was very uncomfortable because you got like multiple people. And I thought, you know, how do you really know what their approach or belief is? You know, I don't even know if it's okay to ask. And I had gone back to a sponsorship book study that we were doing, and I asked him, I said, well, do y'all pray with anybody else? And surprisingly, at that moment, a lot of people were like, no, you know, I haven't had that experience yet. And I said, why don't we all go try and pray with somebody this week and just see what happens? And we all came back the next week, and three of us that responded, we said, well, we thought about it, but then something came up. And I'm proud of that answer because we thought about it, and then we recognized, why did we hesitate in those moments? Or, you know, how often is somebody asking for prayers and we throw the little emoji up, you know, and it's like, what about speaking a specific intention over that situation? You know, I'm praying for strength and tolerance, or I'm praying for acceptance and forgiveness, you know, like something to speak over that situation to help invite that in, right? And I had never even considered that before. I need somebody that understands spiritual retreats. They can't be jealous or conflicted if I need to go and take a 3-day spiritual men's retreat because that's not going to work. It's too big of a part of my recovery. You know, so I'm thinking about these spiritual components that are not necessarily religious, but ways that I'm expanding my spirituality that I need people to support even if they're not going to participate. Does that make sense for people? So a lot of great participation and examples, but again, the idea is hopefully that we'll walk away with different facets of looking at different aspects of it too.
Yeah. All right. So those are some great answers, and I really appreciate you guys being a part of that process. We're going to move into another great part of relationships, and that's going to be about setting boundaries. How many of you guys do well with setting boundaries? How many have room for improvement? There's always room for improvement and growing and bettering ourselves, right?
So you want me to read them?
Yeah, just okay. One at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, they're here.
Under here, yeah.
All right, so we're going to go over some different types of personal boundaries. And we're going to start off with
physical boundaries. These kind of align with some of the quadrants that we did. So if you recognize some of the terms, that's why. So there's going to be physical boundaries. It refers to the personal space and physical touch. Healthy physical boundaries includes an awareness of what's appropriate and what's not in various settings and types of relationships. Hugs, shaking hands, or kissing. Those are just examples. Physical boundaries may be violated if someone touches you when you don't want them to or when they invade your personal space. An example could be rummaging through your bedroom.
And so you think about different aspects and how you show up. And how many people just think that it's a really great idea to just go up and hug everybody that you see? Right? So, but some people have some trauma and sensitivities around that. And like, we don't know. So, you know, a lot of times I feel like it's okay. Or, you know, in the recent years, how much is physical contact? Are we holding hands? Are we not holding hands? Are we shaking hands? Are we fist bumping? Right? So those were all physical boundaries that different people had different comfort levels with. And we weren't sure how to communicate that. And I know from experience, people that testified, I just don't go because I don't know how people are going to respond. And it's so emotionally turbulent trying to figure out what's okay or not okay that I just don't do it. So there's a lot of manifestations of this that could show up. But also you think about, again, taking it back to the pets, the bosses, etc. You know, physical boundaries. Don't get on my bed. My dog likes to sneak up there and get on the bed, and she'll burrow all in the pillows and stuff. And I'm like, that's not okay. That's a physical boundary that we have to keep off. And it's not okay. She got three beds in our house, and they are lush. So it's like, good. But then also, like, at a workplace, right? Think about your physical territory. If somebody comes and asks me to borrow, my number one writing pen, and I say it's okay, that doesn't mean that it's okay for you to keep coming back and take it anytime you want it, right? Just because you asked one time, just, you know, that's a one-time deal, right? You need to ask each time you come and take it. So that might be an example of a physical boundary that you set with people.
Take some more?
Yeah. Examples. Let's take some examples from you guys about some physical boundaries. Asking to give and asking to receive. Yeah. What about someone borrowing your big book and you telling them, hey, you got 2 weeks to borrow that book and then you got to get your own? Not coming over uninvited or unannounced. I'm not able to hear you over there. Someone reading your diary or journal.
Or fourth step.
That's why I burned mine. Yes.
Respecting personal property.
Going through your phone.
How to tell someone, please shut up.
What you trying to say?
Not assuming. All right.
Calling after hours.
Showing up unannounced.
Yeah.
Toilet seat.
I have this coworker. He's so great. Whenever he goes, he puts down both of the seats and just closes it completely. And I'm like, that was so kind of you. I love that. Let's move to the next one. Intellectual boundaries. This refers to thoughts and ideas. Healthy intellectual boundaries includes respect for others' ideas and awareness of appropriate discussion. Should we talk about weather or politics? Intellectual boundaries are violated when someone dismisses or belittles another person's thoughts or ideas. Yeah. So that means sometimes pillow talk does not include politics or religion. Open-mindedness regardless. Story stealing or one-upping. Yeah.
So how about when someone calls you and you're not in a space to receive that information. Like maybe I'm at work and I answer the phone real quick because I see this on and they're like, did you know so-and-so just passed away? And it's like, I'm not really in a space to be hit with that kind of information. So my intellectual space may not be there. The sponge may be full and I may not be able to take any more of that information. Or you're in a learning process and people are given a lot of stuff and it's like, ooh, okay, intellectual boundary, stop. I used to have somebody after a meeting that would elongate and like passionate about the message, but I had to tell him, I said, it's not personal. I want to hear everything you have to say, but I need a timeout. Because I'm just getting so overstimulated with all the stuff you're telling me. I just need to process what you just told me. Is that not an intellectual boundary, maybe?
Yeah. You want me to keep writing?
I'll do it.
Okay.
Gaslighting. Facebook comments.
Time to process, yeah. Keep it simple, stupid.
Unsoliciting advice.
Active listening.
Judgmental.
Fixing.
Sharing private information.
Or gossiping, yes.
Name dropping?
All right.
Going to the next.
All right, we're going to move on to the emotional boundaries. Refers to a person's feelings. Healthy emotional boundaries include limitations on where to share something, when to share something that is personal information. For example, gradually sharing personal information during the development of a relationship as opposed to revealing everything to everyone. Emotional boundaries are violated when someone criticizes, belittles, or invalidates another person's feelings.
Gossip,
yes.
Trauma dumping.
Have you ever met with someone and you immediately feel like you have to tell your whole life?
Love bombing.
Suffocating.
Controlling.
Love bombing. About... dropping the love word.
You know what love bombing?
Oversaturation. So love bombing might be about that over the top. So another type of emotional boundary may come in the form of being able to pick a time and a space that's appropriate. Have you been in a restaurant and somebody agitates a fight and it's like, really, like, let's do an emotional boundary. This isn't the time and space for this. You know, I don't need to bring a public scene into it. So maybe there's some guidelines around that as well. So, again, just thinking about, and I think the helpful thing is once you're exposed to the information and you continue to process, you'll walk away with examples over the next few days with the different types of relationships. And you're like, that felt good, I want more of that. Or that did not feel good, I don't want more of that. Right?
All right. Appropriate display.
Bad mouthing.
Expression?
Expectations.
Scoffing. Validation?
Yeah.
All right. So we're moving on to the next one. All right. Sexual boundaries. Refers to the emotional, intellectual, and physical aspects of sexuality.
Healthy boundaries involve mutual understanding and respect of limitations and desires between sexual partners. Sexual boundaries can be violated with unwanted sexual touch, pressure to engage in sexual acts, leering, or sexual comments.
Rape.
Unwanted flirting.
Someone say pressure.
Guilt tripping.
Withholding.
Withholding, yeah. Which is a real thing, yeah. Sex on the brain. Saying no. And also allowing someone to say no. Yeah. People pleasing. Psyching out. All right. Promiscuity. Flirting. Yeah, with a lot of people.
Ooh, giving in when you don't want to. Good one. What about the freedom to communicate what you want and don't want? Is that not a boundary? Even though it's not the actual action, it's what's the ideal, and do you feel comfortable communicating those things?
Being honest and not cheating. Communicating with someone, yeah. All right.
Not shaving.
Not shaving. First I thought I heard not shaving. I was like, hey. All right. To each their own, for sure. All right, let's move on to the next one. Material boundaries refers to money and possessions. Healthy material boundaries involve setting limits on what you will share and with whom. For example, it may be appropriate to lend a car to a family member, but probably not someone you just met this morning. Material boundaries are violated when someone steals or damages another person's possessions, or when they pressure them to give or lend their possessions. Yeah.
You have an example?
Not letting sponsees live with you. Not being anybody's bank teller.
Guilt.
Put it back.
Put it back?
Yeah.
Lending money.
Keying a car. Been there. Was on my fourth step.
Returning
it better than when you received it? Yeah. Pristine conditions. Communicating spending values.
Yeah.
Did someone say overspending?
Yeah.
Stingy. If you break it, fix it. Respecting other people's property. Return of investments. A balance of giving.
Reciprocation.
Accountability for damaging something, yes. All right. Let's move on to the next one. Time boundaries refers to how a person uses their time. To have a healthy time boundary, a person must set aside enough time for each facet of their life, such as work, relationships, and hobbies. Time boundaries are violated when another person demands too much of another's time. So when we initially talked about this one, I suggested the idea of letting my partner know, like, how many meetings I'm going to go to a week versus how much time we're going to spend together. Letting him know that that's a priority for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So being aware of your partner's time constraints or how much time that they're willing. Having a schedule. Having date nights. Oh, quiet time. Yes, the definition of what quiet time is. Balance. Too much TikTok. So limiting the amount of TikTok one is on. Making a TikTok time.
And how about how long you'll listen to a venting session?
Being honest on your timesheet at work. Yes. Being careful not to overcommit. These are all great answers. Tied through time? Tied through time, okay.
So maybe now talk about the deal breakers and how we're living up to these ideals.
Okay.
Time boundaries with sponsees.
Okay, time boundaries with sponsees. Okay, after looking at all of these different boundaries that we've talked about, there is a point that Micah and I had talked about, deal breaking. What are some of the boundaries that are in your life that you feel like you can't give up? What are some of the boundaries that you feel like you can take it or leave it? You know, prioritizing your boundaries, knowing what is meaningful for you in your life. Sleep? Yeah. Reading? Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And when thinking about the deal breakers, it goes back to the first quadrants that we did or the boundaries that we're setting. But the stream of consciousness list is all about coming into contact and considering it for the first time and saying it out loud, right? I want or I don't want, and I list it. Then I can go back and decide what is a priority, what is a deal breaker, I have to have this or not, it would be nice, and I could take it or leave it. Because remember, we're living up to the ideals, so I can write a Christmas goodie wish list of every relationship I want, but that doesn't mean that universe is just going to drop it in my lap and be like, here you go. So I think one of the discoveries that we found through doing this work is we both did a relationship ideal over 3 years ago, and we did that work together, and we've both been in relationships since then where we've been putting it to play. But was everything on the list, everything what I got? No. But were the deal breakers in place? Yes. And that's what was important. And you think about it like with a relationship with a job. So many people telling me they're not happy with their jobs, but yet they continue to be in that relationship. Well, how often have we considered, is it meeting the needs, not meeting the needs? You know, we have a pet or we take on a responsibility like that we're really not proving ourselves capable of being the best care. And do we ask for that help? Do we keep going in that direction, or do we make adjustments to find the best thing? So it's a lot of decision making where you can decide what's important and what's not, and then look at the action to live up or to move on with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the biggest things that I got out of all this work is the idea that I might compile all these lists of everything that I'm looking for in someone else, someone being that, you know, that perfect thing for me. But what I realize at the end is how much of this am I showing up as for me? You know, how much of these qualities do I present when I'm walking out in my daily life? You know, I can't expect someone else to do those things or be those things for me if I'm not doing it for myself. So that was one of the biggest turnarounds after doing this work for me. So I had to exhibit some of these things in my life. You know, like if I want to find someone who is going to go hiking with me, or a group of friends that's going to go hiking with me, then I have to start hiking at some point. You know, I can't just be in my head being like, I'm going to hike, and these people are going to find me. I have to be actively seeking for these things, you know, in my life, these qualities. So that was one of the biggest revelations that I found out of this work, was
putting it into practice, you know, putting the shoes on and walking the walk and talking the talk and not expecting other people to do that. And this is universal. It's not just in one relationship in my life. It's all the relationships in my life, you know. And this work has been a catalyst for so much, you know. I have a relationship today with so many different people in my life. And I get to challenge the thoughts that I once had about what it is to be in a relationship with somebody. You know, I'm able to confront people whenever I have issues, and we're able to grow through those confrontations, right? And it's not like I'm not like barreling down on them, but I'm actively having a vulnerable conversation about, hey, this is something that went on in our relationship. How can we fix it to grow? How can we make it better?
And a closing thought that we want to leave with you as far as what this does is, or what it did for us, is there's some supplemental worksheets down here. It talks about fair fighting for existing relationships, a lot of boundaries to put on the table when you're already in a relationship of any type. And it's a whole separate packet. It's an additional packet from what you were given. It's down here on the table. So if you'll just take just one per person, if you want that as support. But also it's got some question and answers that you can do more work on your own. And there's also a sheet on conflict resolution, so you can look at some ways of clarifying and resolving situations. But I would have to say that a lot of this work, as we kept growing, people were contributing and adding. So it becomes really a big takeaway for what's right for you. If you walk out of here reexamining the way you looked at any one thing, then I feel like all the work before you that came from all those other alcoholics was meaningful, right? Because, you know, one thing I've learned from relationship is there is no one person that meets every need for me. I have to reach out to a combination of relationships to get what I need. And there's no one magic wand solution like I thought when I came in AA, that you're just going to touch me and tell me that here's the solution and then boom, I'm good, right? It's a learning and growing thing depending on what season I'm in. And I think that one of the most meaningful things is that I'm in the trenches trying. There's not a day in Alcoholics Anonymous that I haven't showed up to skin my knee or feel embarrassed or cry. And just because I'm up here with Dania and we're sitting here talking about this relationship work doesn't mean that we're gliding through relationships effortlessly. You know, I'm taking missteps all the time, but just like the book said, I make amends directly. And the fact that I'm in the trenches trying to connect, and that's why service is so important. It makes us visible, and there's days when Micah, the person, didn't want to show up to the meeting or the event, but Micah, the servant, had to show up because of the commitment I made. But it's the lie I tell myself, the dishonest column from my inventory. It told me the lie I tell myself so I can keep living in the behavior. And when I keep thinking I'm worthless and I'm no good, and that's the way I showed up, couldn't look anybody in the eye. I'd walk looking at the floor, and I could make it as far as the table, and then I could look up and talk to the person next to me. And then I went all the way to the other side of the pendulum where I'm, you know, just over the top in your face, right? And God has softened me to a place through that experience. But never once did I back out of the arena of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that's what's important, is that we're showing up in the arena. And just quoting from that 12 and 12, for people who are like that, AA has a very special meaning. Through it, we learn right relation with others, and we don't have to be alone anymore. Thank y'all.